This Week in Retronauts, it's the 511 where we give you the 411. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Retronauts episode 511. And as promised, this is an episode about information. Not that they aren't all about information, but this is the first time in several years, a mailbag episode. So it's the information that you, the audience, the Retronauts community, actually cares about and wants to know more about. And here we are to deliver it to you. And by we, I mean myself, Jeremy Parrish, and this episode, we've gone through multiple personnel changes during planning. This was meant to be a Retronauts East episode, and we kind of almost sort of ended up that way by mistake, but there have been health problems and funerals, and so the team here is kind of the backup, and that doesn't mean that they're lesser, just that this was a different mix of people in my mind trying to get the old Retronauts East crew back together again for the first time in a while. But that didn't work out. And yet, it's still going to be, as the kids say, a banger, because we have fine, talented folks, including here on the East Coast, a kind of auxiliary Retronauts East member. You're practically part of the team now, actually.
Yes, emerging from the DC swamp, it's Kevin Bunch.
Wow, the swamp. And then let's just continue rotating around the world. Let's fly opposite the rotation of the planet so that we can turn back time like Superman, because this is Retronauts and it's about turning back time. Yes, in the UK we have...
Oh, thank God. I was hoping that you weren't going to make me guess, because I never know any what direction anything is on the map. This is an established issue. I consider myself part of Retronauts East, but it's Retronauts East Anglia. That's a joke for the people who live in East Anglia.
Well, you're further east than me, so that makes you extreme yeah, east. With an X at the beginning, that's how extreme it is.
Real extreme.
And then finally, so far east, it might as well be west.
Good evening. It is I, Diamond Fight, and I'm in Japan, so it's already the evening where we are. So yeah, I'm the most in the future. I'm actually anti-Retronauts.
Yeah, I thought you were wearing a turtle sensei Dragon Ball gi at first, but it's actually a bathrobe, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I wear this for a lot of recordings. It's very comfortable.
I just hadn't noticed. That's amazing. It looks comfortable. Probably better than the ratty old sweatshirt that I'm wearing, because I just woke up and I have not dressed or showered or done anything civilized yet today. And yet, here we are attempting to answer your questions. So I think we should just jump right in. There's no real need for a preamble for this topic, because it's not really a topic. It is a coalition of topics, a smattering, a sprinkling of topics, as depicted by you, the listener. Wow, listen to that echo. This sounds so important.
Crazy.
Okay.
This is the most video game possible episode of Retronauts, because we are responding to viewer requests and information. So in a way, it's an interactive episode. They're giving us information and we're responding to the information. So it's, you know, it's a asynchronous multiplayer episode of Retronauts.
Right. But we're all FMV.
Yes.
You say, if they're lucky, the writers for our dialogue were on point today.
They're not done. We're done by working designers. So I'm about to make some really dated pop culture references.
Excellent.
If I'm going to be FMV, I want to be one of them small, like, square FMVs in the middle with just, like, 5 frames per second. It's like Sega CD. That's what I want to be.
Yeah, I like the working designs idea. I'm going to make a joke at some point that ties Glover to the O.J. Simpson trial. It's going to be amazing.
Yes.
All right. Why don't we just jump right in and start with a question from Kevin Delane. What is the team's thoughts on Arcade 1-Up? Do they think it will survive longer? What can they improve on? Does anyone actually have any experience with Arcade 1-Up?
I have a question. An important question.
Okay.
What is Arcade 1-Up?
Well, Diamond, I'm glad you asked. Because I have the ability to provide context. I have a pair of Arcade 1-Up cabinets here next to me that I'm trying desperately to get rid of, and the person who's going to take them keeps not taking them. Anyway, Arcade 1-Up are those three-quarter height replica cabinets. Basically, they are a shrunken-down arcade cabinet that contains anywhere from like 3 to 12 games in them that are officially licensed, and they get some pretty good licenses. They brought The Simpsons back into circulation, and Marvel versus Capcom, I believe. Marvel versus Capcom 2. They're doing some impressive things with licenses, but has anyone actually used an Arcade 1-Up besides myself?
I've used them at an arcade that inexplicably has a room of them.
Yeah, did you feel like they were arcade caliber? Like you said, oh, this would have been, you know, if I had had access to these as a kid, I would have totally skipped over the actual Mr. Do cabinet.
I don't know that I would go that far. The build quality is good, but it doesn't feel as good as the actual old arcade cabinets. I'm sure that's just a price concern, but...
Can I come at it from the perspective of someone who's never used one? And
yeah, go for it. Just speak from ignorance.
I mean, how much do they cost? How much are we talking here?
Well, this actually ties into my response to Kevin. When they first started out, they were like $350 or so.
Okay.
But they've risen in price to become closer to $1,000.
I mean, I kind of feel like if I wanted to have an arcade machine at home, I would probably just pull my money and get like a MAME cabinet that's full size or something. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, obviously I delete all those MAME games after 24 hours, but...
Ah, there you go.
You know.
That's a good lad. Yes. So that's kind of the problem with Arcade 1-Up. They're like the build quality has actually... It's kind of weird. Like, they started out with some issues with their materials. Like, their screens weren't great. And their controls, like the actual sticks and everything, were pretty bad. And people started, you know, customizing them with Sanwa controller components and that sort of thing. Which kind of raised the question of, like, why not just, you know, get something that has those things built in from the start? But they did have the advantage of... good licenses. And I feel like that's kind of all they're running on now, because from what I understand, the newer machines are actually flimsier and actually have worse screens. And so while maybe the control components are better quality, and you do have stuff like, you know, X-Men or whatever, it's a difficult proposition when you're saying, hey, give us, you know, $800 for the ability to play three Simpsons games, one of which you don't even care about.
I guess even a three-quarter size arcade machine isn't small. Like, space is a premium, which it is for almost everyone. Like,
yes.
I just want one full-size cabinet that will play everything. I don't want to buy, like, I mean, unless they did one with, like, Sanson or something, in which case I'd have to remortgage or something, whatever, but... I don't know.
Sunsun cab would be pretty sweet.
Sunsun's awesome. I worst of my life.
I mean, for my part, there is a piece of me that says, why not turn one of these into like a Mr. Cade? But then the components aren't right. Like, the controls aren't great. I don't know. I bought the Atari 12-in-1 because it has a bunch of really great classic arcade games. And I thought, wow, being able to play Centipede with an actual trackball, being able to play Tempest with an actual spinner. That sounds incredible. I've got to have this. But, you know, the control components were just not very good. And what I discovered is that the Replicade miniature cabinets that are like a foot tall came out at the same time with a much better take on Centipede, like a much more satisfying trackball. And Replicade, New Wave Toys, has really done their homework over time. And, try to improve their components, and the trackball, it's tiny. The tiny little trackball on their Missile Command machine from a few months ago is so good. Like, I cannot believe how effectively they managed to make this teeny tiny little replica of something that's entire existence is predicated on its mass and size work so effectively. And I just don't feel that sense of commitment from Arcade 1UP. So I'm sure they'll do okay. But I mean, you know, again, for perspective, my second Arcade 1UP is the Final Fight Arcade 1UP, which I bought because it was on clearance for $100. And I said, wow, I've always wanted a Strider cabinet. That's one of like two arcade machines that I've always really wanted. And this has Strider on it, so I can have Strider as an arcade game. And I've spent about 15 minutes playing that version of Strider because the emulation just isn't quite there. And, you know, I'd rather just play Strider on Mister on a CRT, which I've done, and it rules. And the Arcade 1UP version just, it's not satisfying to me because it just, I've played the actual arcade version of Strider, you know, in recent years at gaming events, and I know what it should feel like, and it doesn't feel like that.
So you're paying hundreds of dollars.
Or $800 in the case of mine.
Yeah. Or $100. Okay. And but generally speaking, they would be expecting you to pay something like $300, $400 or so.
Oh, like I said, it's more like $800 now because of the licenses.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. So $800 for a inconvenient thing that doesn't even have authenticity, really, because it's not the right size. It doesn't have good components, doesn't have a good screen, it doesn't even emulate the games properly.
But the new ones have Wi-Fi for some reason.
Why? Fi.
So you can play Killer Instinct online instead of playing it online.
Just like you used to in the arcade.
Yeah. Right. Right. Gotcha. Yes.
That's the appeal of the arcade is standing alongside someone else who's absolutely handing you your ass. I don't want to play online. If I wanted to play online, I just put the Xbox on.
Right.
I'm going to go ahead and write this Arcade 1UP business off completely. I'm done with
yes,
it.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't want it.
No, I think they'll do okay. I think they need to deal with their prices. That's their biggest drawback at the moment. Because they are not aiming for people like us. They're aiming for people who casually say, oh, I remember that game, and they haven't played them, you know, recently on real hardware, and it's not going to bother them that the emulation's a little sticky and the controls are a little substandard and the screens are ish. So, yeah, I don't know. I think they'll be fine, but it's not for me. That's all I can say. I don't want this to turn into the bagging on 1UP or Arcade 1UP. It's not the mailbagging on Arcade 1UP is what I'm saying. It's just the mailbag. So let's move along.
I have great news, by the way. I looked it up. I did indeed see an Arcade 1UP cabinet when I was in Costco here in Japan. They were selling one. And it sucked me right in like a vacuum tube. Just sucked me right in. And I was like, oh, I can play an arcade game at home. Look at that. Obviously, it was too expensive for me to purchase. But yeah, I'm a sucker for those sort of things. So If the price was right, I probably would buy one of those things and stick it in this room that I'm standing in right now. But
It's a holodeck. You've got infinite space back there.
Yes.
We'll just summon it.
This is a visual joke that doesn't work for anyone who's not on our Zoom call.
I'll be honest, I've only had one experience with an Arcade 1UP, but you know, as a shopper, I was like, well, this is intriguing to me, but I couldn't. $800 is too much. $100 maybe.
You know, they make a candy cab one. I would consider that, just to put something else in it.
If they did one that was a version of the Tuppenny Waterfalls, where you drop your 2p coin in and it pushes it down onto a shelf, and eventually you push down like more coins, I'd probably buy that.
Just a fun way to get your own money. Yeah.
And you could put things on it that you wanted as prizes. So I could get like a little Kirby figure and stick it on the pile of 2p coins, and then like a standard one, and go, oh, that's impossible. They've glued that down. You'd never get that.
right. So this is mailbag as in multiple mail pieces. So let's move along so this entire podcast isn't just Arcade 1-Up. anyway, the point is, sure, they're going to be fine. If you browse casually, they're fine. It's fine. We have a bunch of them at the office, and people love the NBA Jam one. So there you go.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Here's one from Heath Bashara that does not work for this group and is better suited for myself and Bob and, like, Scott Sharkey. Since it says, as Retronauts has been going for a good while now, have you accomplished all the goals you had when you started? I mean, hey, I would love to hear, actually, your thoughts on that, Diamond, Stu. Kevin? have you done what you've wanted to do with this podcast so far?
I mean, it's my journey's not complete, but I would say, you know, last month when I recorded and released an episode dedicated to Cho Aniki, the gayest episode of Retronauts so far, I felt like I accomplished at least a miniature goal.
How can you say that when Nadia just posted the LGBTQ history podcast?
So far.
That point, I see.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So pushing us more to the rainbow end of the spectrum, I do think that is definitely happening. So that's good. Stuart, what about you?
I mean, I'm never going to run out. I've tried to sort of keep it relatively broad while still covering kind of UK-ish stuff and my sort of hobby horse stuff, like when I did retro compilations, which I was pleased to do very recently because it meant I finally got to talk to Digital Eclipse, which was a joy because I love them. And I want to kind of keep trying to do more balancing with more sort of interview content along with discussion. I want to do some that I've only mentioned this to you very briefly, so feel free to, you know, throw me out of a window or something, but I also want to try and do some sort of documentary-ish ones at some point where I clip a lot of stuff together to try and kind of make a story about something rather than, you know, where I don't feel like it would necessarily suit just a few guys talking. Mm-hmm. I want to do one about UK gaming magazine scene, and I know quite a lot of people in that, so I think I could get a good little thing going. So, yeah, that's it. But I'm not ever going to run out of my completely debased garbage to talk about. Like, we have like the entire micro scene to talk about, and there's so much that we haven't done.
I can't believe we've had Jazz Rignall on this podcast several times and not on episodes with you. It was before your time. We gotta bring that together.
I'm gonna try and get him for the magazines one because obviously he's gonna have a lot to say about that, but I haven't actually asked yet. Jazz, if you're listening, I promise that I'm not a cretin. Thanks.
Or if he is, he's your kind of cretin. Kevin, what about you? Do you have any dreams for Retronauts? We should actually have you co-host some episodes or just host them sometime. You're really good and you know all kinds of stuff, but I don't know if you have ambitions for when you talk on this podcast.
I mean, I have a lot of topics I can speak on that I haven't gotten the chance to, although you did let me go on a diatribe about the CDI Zelda games, so that's one thing I was able to check off.
All right. As for myself, I didn't have ambitions when I started the podcast. It was just a lot of other publications, or the publications within the 1UP Ziff Davis banner in 2006 were starting up podcasts. And I said, hey, no one's talking about old games, so I should do a few episodes of that. And my goal, I guess, was to, one, come up with a proper name for the show, and two, you know, do like 5 or 6 episodes talking about old games before everyone lost interest in podcasts and they went away. So two, I nailed it. We're up to, you know, if you count the 1UP run and the Retronauts micro episodes, we're at like 800 episodes now. So damn. Go us. And that's not even counting Diamond's mini podcasts. That's going to take us close to 1,000. So yeah, we're kicking ass. In terms of coming up with a proper name, no, I never came up with a placeholder for Retronauts. So someday we'll rebrand and then I can retire. All right. I think this is a question we could revisit sometime with Bob and some other longtime contributors to the show. But for the moment, we have a letter from Crary Myers, who says, something that's been on my mind for the last couple of years. During the pandemic and afterward, I noticed that my gaming habits were highly affected by my mood. When not feeling so great, I tend to return to games of my youth that require basically zero thought for me to play. Dragon Quest III, for instance, or, if I really want to tune out, NES Tennis or Joust. But sometimes I feel that habit is self-reinforcing, so my two related questions are, do you find your mood affects your gaming choices, and do you ever find yourself in a sort of unenjoyable gaming loop? And if so, what do you do to break out of it? That's an interesting question. Mm. I'm going to hand the mic to Stuart to start off.
Oh, hello. Well, I noticed very prominently that in the last, over the lockdown, I had more, this sounds like bragging, but it's just a matter of circumstance. During lockdown initially, I had more money than sense and infinite time. Because I was...
No, that was everyone.
Yeah, I was furloughed for 5 months before they bothered to even log me into the computer system so I could work from home. So I was on basically full pay for 5 months while doing all my freelance stuff constantly because I had all the time in the world. So I bought a bunch of stuff that I really didn't particularly need, but I'm happy to have, like, sort of modded Game Boy and, like, modded Mega Drive, that sort of thing. And I never really had original hardware before then. I just didn't bother. But once I got this Mega Drive, I noticed that because I didn't buy any, like, advanced cables for it, I could only plug it into one television, and it looked like shit. Like, it looked terrible because I only had, like, RF cables or something. And I noticed that whenever I put it on and I played it, no matter how bad a mood I was in, I would immediately cheer up. It was something about the fuzziness and the almost sort of distance of it. It was just like a Proustian, like, rush, and I would just get looped straight into just, like, nothing else matters. I've melted away. I live here in Fuzzworld now. This is now my life. I'm sitting here. I'm going to play Talmud's Adventure on the Mega Drive for 2 hours, and no matter what was bothering me before, I'm now going to be in a great mood. It was like being on, like, you know, digital, like, Prozac or something. I don't know. It was great.
I feel like we spend all of our time looking at LCD and LED screens. And so when you put yourself in front of a CRT, it's like a treat. It's like, I'm experiencing something special. It feels like a vacation.
Mm.
Like, oh, there's this warm glow to this, and it's unpredictable, and it seems kind of bad, but that's good.
Ever since then, for some reason, like my enjoyment of retro is just like tripled, and now I play it way more than I would ever play anything modern. I just don't. I'm not that interested in modern gaming as much anymore, other than the few little things I dip into. And a lot of the things I do enjoy tend to have roots in older stuff anyway. But yeah, it can be. It's the stupid phrase, but chicken soup for the soul, you know. It's that whole thing. It's just like, I'm here. This is very familiar. I'm not really being challenged, but I'm just having a good time. Like, this is all reliable, you know. It's nice.
Kevin, what about you?
Oh man, I was just noodling over quite a few things there. I know that if I'm in a good mood, you know, I'll play whatever. During the lockdown, I remember I played a lot of really weird games that I hadn't really messed with at first, and eventually just sort of defaulted back to, you know, Super Mario and Zelda and whatnot, and seeing if I could run through those still. And I remember, back a few years ago, we had a stillbirth, and I remember that put me in a really, really bad headspace, as it would. And the first game that I was able to actually, like, play and enjoy was the original Super Mario Brothers. And, you know, that was a turning point. I'm sorry. My writers are drunk today. And it improved things a little bit once I was able to start enjoying things once more. And, you know, I can always depend on Super Mario Brothers, I guess, is where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm. Diamond, what about you?
So this is a very interesting question to me because we are fresh into the new year of 2023 right now, and I have been trying, not a New Year's resolution, but I've been trying to convince myself to, you know, push myself and not settle. I don't want to settle for things. And last year, I was very comfortable just waking up in the morning, like, oh, it's time to play Fortnite to get my levels. Oh, it's time to play Magic the Gathering to get my daily rewards. And that didn't feel good, especially Magic the Gathering, because Magic the Gathering is a very frustrating game when it doesn't go your way. So I've actually deleted Magic the Gathering from my phone. I actually took it off because I was getting so angry when I wasn't getting the cards I wanted, and I was just furious. Like, no, this game is not fun for me. I play it sometimes still, but at least it's not on my phone where I can play it all the time, which I think was a very important choice for me. So lately, I cannot refuse. I cannot refuse the Siren's Call of Vampire Survivors. It is still so.
Are there actually sirens in that game?
You know, there's harpies, but I don't think there's sirens. No one sings to me. But I've been trying to balance things out. I've been trying to say, look, try this. Okay, you have game time? Try this. You've got, you know, hundreds and hundreds of games on your Steam account. Why not try this? You've got this, you know, here it is. It's on camera. It's a Steam Deck. Look at this thing. It's gorgeous. I should spend more time playing it. So I'm trying to, in this new year, I'm trying to ease myself into trying this new thing, trying new things. Play a game you always wanted to play. Play a game you haven't played in a long time. Don't just tune everything out and, oh, well, I've played this game a million times already. So we'll see how the year goes, but I am pushing myself right now to not just settle for something that's comfortable and I know how to do this and, oh, I can turn my brain off. I don't want to turn my brain off. I want to experience new things. But I still love Vampire Survivors. I don't know where that puts me. So at least I'm conscious. I'm conscious of the fact that sometimes I just want a Vampire Survivor and I don't want to think too hard.
But if you love Vampire Survivors, could I recommend to you online slot machines for real money? Because they operate under exactly the same addictions, I have to say.
Oh no, I'm not
going to critique you. I bought that game. I bought the DLC for that game. I'm in no position to add, but that game is just properly cranking the addiction center of your brain constantly. That's what makes it so compulsive. It's like barely even a game. I'm not criticizing it. It's done very well, but my word, that game is some toxic poison. I think I accidentally criticized it when I called it toxic poison. Damn.
As for myself, I actually found my mood effects, my gaming choices, like 20 years ago when I was out of work and had a lot of time, not a lot of money, but I did have access to a bunch of games and I just didn't want to play anything. So I would just kind of gravitate back to retro games. And, you know, now I don't really keep up at all with modern games aside from like awareness of them. But that is not a mood thing. That is I spent 15 years in the games press feeling like I needed to be on top of everything at every moment. And it was exhausting. And now I've just kind of carved myself a comfortable little niche. And I'm just talking about the history and context of old video games from the 1980s. And it's really enjoyable because I'm just, you know, playing new stuff that I'd never played before, even though it's actually old stuff. That's the irony of it. And I do enjoy that irony. So I guess that's my way to break out of a bad gaming loop is just, you know, carve yourself a niche as a person who spends dozens of hours a week making video game content. Okay, good job. Don't do that, everyone. It's not healthy.
I have to say, just on what you said, I do love the fact that even after all these years I've been playing old games, like not exclusively, but near exclusively, every so often something completely new to me will still crop up, like a whole system with like hundreds of games I've somehow managed to miss completely. It was the Sharp, what's it called, X68000, recently I discovered it happens to be maybe the best thing I've ever seen in my entire life. So that was quite good. That was
fun.
It's
an extraordinary machine.
Yeah, I was like, this appears to be a completely, almost exclusive Gradius game that's actually one of the best Gradius games I've ever played. How fascinating.
That is a really good game.
What a banger.
Konami and Capcom, they delivered on that system. Although, and it's a shame that it's so inaccessible in America.
They're doing it mini, aren't they?
They are.
Mini. Yeah.
But it's like a crowdfunded thing, so it seems difficult also.
I wonder how many of the games will be erotica. That's my current worry.
I don't know that X68000 really had as much of that as like the PC-98.
Right.
That's where you're going to find your you know, six color nude ladies.
Right. Let me just, what was that PC-98?
So
let me just write
brilliantly
this down,
rendered in six colors. It's like the artistry of those games, irrespective of the actual content, was spectacular. So
you only need a few colors anyway. One color for skin, one slightly darker color for nipple. That's all you need. I'm good.
Yeah, you know, the ZX Spectrum school of art design.
Oh, God, yeah, Samantha Fox strip poker. Oh, full episode about Samantha Fox strip poker coming soon, everyone.
So, from Matthew Lutz, is there any aspect of retro video game design that you would like to see make a comeback or are glad has made a comeback? I noticed after Demon's Souls became relatively popular, we started seeing more games that put an emphasis on strategy, exploration, and getting one-hit killed by a gigantic monster you accidentally stumble upon. This has been great. Dark Souls, Nioh, Sekiro all make me think of the older games I've always come back to, like Castlevania, Tenchu, Ninja Gaiden, or Baldur's Gate. Of course, there still hasn't been a decent snowboarding game in a while, and I can't remember the last time someone released a puzzle game where you push blocks. So I would like to hear what your crew thinks. That's a big question. Kevin, I'm putting this one on you.
Oh, boy. So the first thing that sprung to mind, is that a word? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. Was the recent Samurai Showdown game, because that lands the feel of, you know, those older games so well, and nothing else in the fighting game space that I've really messed with nails that feeling of just the weight and the emphasis of the hits and the way everything comes together. Just very well done. I'd also actually go with Streets of Rage 4, which, yes, is a sequel to the older Streets of Rage games, but the way they take those core concepts and update them, it works so well for me. I've put in,
hell yeah,
so much time on that game.
Have you been playing the survival mode they put in with the DLC? That absolutely ruined my life for like weeks. I just couldn't stop playing it.
Yeah, basically anytime I'm on a long flight or just have time to kill, that's one that I just will pop on and play for an hour. And yeah,
For me, it actually already happened, Metroidvania and roguelikes, and now I want to uncurl those monkey paw fingers and maybe take it back, like, kind of oversaturated on those. But, you know, for a short while, like 10, 15 years ago, I was living the good life. All the things I loved had really gone mainstream, and now it's just, There are still good new ideas coming out of those spaces, but it's a lot of reiteration on things that is a little tiring. So I guess innovation in those spaces, that's what I'd like to see come back. Diamond.
Well, I think we've had pixel 8-bit nostalgia, we've had pixel 16-bit nostalgia, and we've had a lot of recent games that are kind of like PS1-ish nostalgia. So I'm looking forward to a sort of a Dreamcast renaissance. You know, I think Dreamcast games had a certain look and a certain je ne sais quoi that I really want to come back. I want to, you know, I was just recently watching the Awesome Games Done Quick speedrun of Illbleed. Illbleed is such a fascinatingly ugly but beautiful and, you know, quirky game. And just Dreamcast games had that feeling that I don't know how to put it into words. Like, it's a high frame rate, lots of colors, lots of polygons. It's not low poly, but it's like it doesn't look realistic, but it doesn't look like PS1 either. And I hope that you know, indie creators are always great about this. So I hope that indie people just embrace that and we start getting games that look like they might have come out, you know, around 2000, 2001. I look forward to more games like that. I would love that, please.
I think we're just seeing the very beginning of that with some Puppet Combo and stuff like X Zodiac gave me big Dreamcast vibes. I know it's a Star Fox thing, but it really feels and runs like a Dreamcast game. So, yeah. Sorry, Stephen, go on.
No, I think you're right. I think it's coming. You know, it's always a matter of, it's just a matter of time. You know, I think it's on the way. I want to see too many. You know, when there's too many, that's when you got some good ones, you got some bad ones, but too many is a good, too much of a good thing in this case is a good thing. So I want too many.
Maybe they'll start porting the PS1 style ones to a sort of Dreamcast form. I don't know. Maybe that would be the way to do it. Mine's kind of been done, and I don't want to get into it because it's just difficulty discourse, and that makes me want to chop my own head off. So, honestly, the thing that I am pleased did come back is what was said. It's the Dark Souls style thing of having challenge at all, and that sounds so arrogant, but I like it when you've got some stakes. I like it when you can lose progress. I don't think that Dark Souls, while it is challenging, I don't think it is like overtly difficult. But then again, I have to remember that I grew up when it was normal to have three lives and two continues, and many contemporary gamers have never, there's never been a thing for them. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just not how it's been, you know? Even on, say, the GameCube days, that wasn't really what was happening. It was a lot of infinite lives around then, and I need to remember that. I need to remember that the world of gaming isn't necessarily for me anymore. There will always be things for me, thanks to indies, thanks to certain, you know. But, yeah, I'm just very grateful to have things like Bloodborne where I can get stuck in, and it does feel like I am playing one of my older sort of games and having the same sort of equivalent experience with some of the more modern quality of life stuff that I wish had been there, you know, back then.
Yeah, let me offer my perspective on this, having recently begun really digging into the Master System library.
Beautiful.
Those games are really hard. And some of them are really hard in a compelling way, like Fantasy Zone, where it's really about skill, learning patterns, learning behaviors, predicting the randomization, strategizing the stuff you're going to buy in the shop. Mm. Like, that's good. Fantasy Zone, you know, despite the downgrades on Master System from the arcade version, is really good, and I really like it. But then you have something like My Hero, which is really hard in an extremely bad way, because when they took it from the arcade, they said, well, we don't have enough space to include the whole game, so we're going to only include the first third of the game, and we're going to make it impossible to see the ending. And what they did to make it impossible to see the ending was take it so that the dude, you know, it's a kung fu clone, so there are these guys who are constantly coming at you from both sides of the screen, and you have to punch them. In the arcade, you know, those guys will come out, and then they'll kind of, you know, stand next to you, kind of take the stance, and hover back and forth before they punch. And so you have time to kind of react and position yourself and, you know, get a hit in before they attack you, because it's one hit kills. In the home version, they took out that behavior where they hang back. They literally walk into you from off the screen, and immediately, as soon as they are, like, the first frame of when they are within range of you, they punch you and you die. And, you know, taking out that little bit of you know, that little bit of extra behavior and just making it so you're constantly being besieged by enemies that you don't really have the control nuance to properly deal with sucks. And that's not good. No. So, you know, hard for hard's sake is not great. But when it's really carefully considered and works well, then yeah. I'm still on the fence about Alex Kidd, but...
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, High Tech World is one of the worst games I've ever played in my life, so...
Miracle World, actually.
Oh, no, that was okay. Fine, but that... No. In no way is my opinion of Miracle World informed by the fact that it was one of the first games I ever played and one of the only games I had for several years.
Yes, you're very... I realize you're very objective when it comes to this game.
Yeah. Now, when I say I like the sort of difficulty comeback, I feel like I don't... This sounds like I'm having a go at you, but I'm not. I feel like I shouldn't necessarily add... When it's good, I don't want it just to be harder. I just feel like there are a fair number of games that would benefit from having some teeth. For me personally,
yeah, I think the nuance of, you know, most old games were not actually that good or fun, even if they were hard, is sometimes, you know, just kind of, I think, taken for granted by some people, but not necessarily understood by others who didn't experience that, and they go back and they play older games that are not necessarily good, and they're like, oh, this is garbage. Who would want this?
I've been recently playing the highly acclaimed Sunsoft Batman game for the NES, the first one. Like, platforming, wall-jumping, like, kind of classic, great-looking Batman game. And I found myself thinking the whole time, and this is way harder than it is fun. Like, I mean, it feels great to control, but it would be so much better for me if this game was just a little bit easier. It doesn't need to be, like, super easy, but, for God's sake, it's brutal. It's a brutal game.
Yeah, it really demands you learn the nuances to basically to the pixel level, which of course, as a child with nothing else to do in life, I did that. But yeah, going back to it more recently, I made it to the final stage, but I could not reach the Joker. And I said, you know what? I'm okay with this.
That's yeah, you're just like, I'm done.
Because once you do get to the Joker, then that's even more ridiculous.
I've seen that. He's shooting lightning bolts at you that you just come from the sky and just kill you. I love it. Yeah, it's nonsense.
Great. Just like in the movie. Okay, let's move on to another question. So this is from Mr. Tslevel? Sure. Or BT? I don't know. Mailbags are weird sometimes. Similar to the meme, what color is the dress? What do you think of which color Parappa's beanie hat is? I always think of red first as someone who has purchased the hat twice, once from the Metreon store in San Francisco and again from Sony's online store in 2000, where it's in red. The red matches the cover of the US release of the first game. However, it looks like any other appearance of Parappa's hat is more of an orangish color. Whether it's merchandise, the anime, the Japanese cover of the first game, or later official editions of the hat released, it's that orange color. Does anyone on this mailbag roundtable have a strange gaming nuance that sticks in their mind they can share? So that might be two questions, actually.
It's orange.
It's red.
In my brain, it's orange.
I say brick red. I say it's both. Red and orange.
This is the feud that destroys Retronauts.
I apologize for taking the centrist view. Kevin, do you have opinions on Parappa's hat?
It's red, because I've only ever seen the PS1 release, and also I'm partially colorblind, so it just always looks red.
Well, do you have any gaming nuances that stick in your mind?
That's tough. I don't know. I'll think on that.
Can I butt in with one that has always occurred to me? This is quite a well-known one, but it totally hit me. You know Aghanim in Link to the Past?
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was a goofy-looking little dude with a big nose, but he's actually got his face lower, much lower than I thought it was. I thought his hat was like his face, because it looks a bit like, what's his name from Earthbound? Where his eyes are covered by his hair. I don't know how to describe this. Everyone listening probably knows what I'm talking about. But when you look at the Aghanim sprite, he does look to me like he's got his head much higher than it actually is. It's supposed to be shrouded in darkness. It's like that the angry eyes and the little mouth, but no.
Yeah, I always saw it as what they intended with the eyes peering out from the darkness. But maybe that's because I grew up with Jawas and Orko. And I feel like there was something else around that time. Yeah, Black Mages and Final Fantasy. I'd played Final Fantasy before Zelda, so I guess I'd just been like the mental prime had been pumped.
I think there were a few sprites like that mostly go back to the fact that I was looking at not very good screens necessarily, but then again, they were designed for those said screens, so it's difficult.
Diamond?
I just want to
share a file. How do I look?
I did because I looked at my official Parappa the Rapper line stickers, and in those stickers, his hat is clearly orange.
Case closed.
Yeah, that's the those are official stickers. Those are.
We need a statement from Sony about the Pantone color.
We need a statement from Parappa, and it has to be in rap form. Mm.
Apparently, Parappa's voice actor is a jerk. So let's.
Parappa's kind of a jerk. So. He just loved Sunny Funny so much.
He's a puppy that loves a flower. Come on. Yeah, who can begrudge that?
Yeah, and he needs to go for a piss. We wouldn't relate to that.
Yes, absolutely. Now that I'm old and have high blood pressure and have to take pills, I'm like, Parappa, I'm there with you. Diamond, do you have any nuances that stick in your mind?
Nuances?
Yes, akin to this question.
I am drawing a big blank, so I will just say that Neo Geo games are the best, and anything that looks like Neo Geo is good by me.
Good nuance. I'm liking it.
Yeah. Sprite scaling. That's nuance. Sprite scaling.
And it's always going to look super weird on composite if you were playing it on an AES.
An interesting nuance is that Sonic is both good and bad at the same time.
How do they manage that? Is
by
it like
being reasonably bad at making games, I guess.
Is it like Schrodinger's Hedgehog?
Yeah, they made up one of the coolest
characters. Both good and bad until
they made
you look.
One of the coolest characters ever, and then they just constantly put him in crappy games. I don't know what they're thinking.
they made Sonic Labyrinth for somebody.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of nuances along these lines, and of course nothing's coming to mind, but once this show is recorded, I will have so many ideas.
Then we can do a full episode. Nuances in retro games.
I'm allergic to nuance, actually.
Yeah, same. I hate it.
Sneezing.
I hate nuance. Whenever something has layers beyond the surface, I'm just like, ugh.
That's the worst.
I hate ogres,
just give me
especially.
That. Just give me those first impressions, please.
Oh, I know a good retro gaming nuance. Okay. I know a good one. Okay. When you rate something an 8, but you say certain components of it aren't very good and people don't understand, that's always fun. That's just like, what do you mean that you said this was bad and this was bad, but you still gave it an 8? What do you mean it's more than the sum of its parts? That's a nonsensical statement.
You know, I guess my nuance would be that, you know, things that are bad are not necessarily, like, they can still be interesting and they can still be fun, like, along those lines. Like,
hell yeah.
Like the aforementioned CDI Zelda games, or, you know, there's some truly atrocious games on the Atari 2600 that I've played over the years, and I'm like, yeah, this game's objectively got problems, but it's fun. Like, there's entertainment value to be had here.
Hell yeah. Bangers and Mash on the Spectrum, as good as Mario 3.
Oh, the Spectrum.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, yeah. I mean, I did buy one when I visited London some years ago,
nice.
So I do know. Ribbit, ribbit, I got told it. Last toilet with me, have me already sold it. In the rain or in the snow, I got the funky flow. But now, I really got to go. In the rain or in the snow, you got the funky flow. But now, you really gotta go. The toilet over there will bring you luck. So give up, I got no time to spare. The toilet over there will bring you luck.
All right, so we're back, and now other people besides me are also going to read questions. It's very exciting.
Okay, Luke Saracen-Clark writes, what GameCube, Wii U, or 3DS games would the RetroArts crew most like to see ported to the Switch and other modern systems?
Ooh. Oh, easy, Skies of Arcadia. Thank you. Good night.
A port of a port. Vex. I want Vex on the Switch. Thank you.
I would love to try that Zelda Wind Waker game, but not on the Wii U, where it costs like $50. And
oh yeah,
we may get a full episode about this later this year because it's turning 20. But I would love to see some kind of slime Mori Mori Dragon Quest compilation on modern systems, because they had one Game Boy Advance game, one DS game, and one 3DS game. And each game is better than the one before it.
I didn't even know there was a 3DS game. I love the DS one.
Yeah,
well, it had boats.
The reason you don't know about it. Yeah, because it was never localized. It was never released outside of Japan. So those are games that I would love to see in other versions.
Can I make a controversial suggestion that will probably be ridiculed in the comments?
Go ahead, hit me.
We'll ridicule you here, actually.
New Super Mario Brothers 2, and New Super Mario Brothers Wii, all in one, New Super Mario Brothers All-Stars, let's go.
That could be kind of sweet.
600 ass, the same goddamn levels, don't even care. I'm ready, let's have it. I love all of those games. I swear that there was an episode recently where I absolutely went off on one about how much I love those games. New Super Mario Bros. 2, like, everyone constantly dumps on it, and it's so good. It's good.
The level
Jeremy.
Designs are great, and it's just like the dopamine hit you get from just collecting coins. It just takes over, and you start doing really stupid things too, and taking dumb risks to get coins, because you're like, there's coins everywhere. I have to get them all, and you don't need them all because they're everywhere, but you just want them.
I posted on Twitter a video of me playing that game where basically there's a level where it's an underwater level, but at the start of the stage there's the little intermission stage where you go down a pipe. It's like one screen, and it's like, here we go, water level. Next to the pipe there are those big spiky blooper things floating there, and if you jump into the water and do a really needless, pointless swim around of those, it gives you 3 coins. It's like, here's some coins for being an idiot. And I'm like, anyone who doesn't like this game can get out of my life. that is peak jip right there. That is what I want from every game, is for me to get my head into stupid little cubby holes and take pointless risks, and the game to go, fine, here's some coins. So here's a bear coin in Donkey Kong Country or something. Just like, let's go. What a great, great game New Super Mario Bros. 2 is. So underrated. It's not fair how people dump on it.
You know, Nintendo really messed up with that series just by the way they spaced out the games. They clustered like three great releases together in the space of a couple of years, and people were just tired of them. If they had spread them out, I think, you know, like every 3, 4, 5 years, people would still be really into them, much more so than they have been. But there was just this kind of burnout that happened. And now we haven't had a new one since, it's been 10 years. Come on.
Do we need a new one? They peaked. Like, that was like peak Mario.
We need new Super Mario Brothers. Come on. They can always do better.
They dusted their hands off and went, well, we've made the best 2D Mario game ever. We're done. Like, why continue?
There's always a higher target to shoot for, no matter whether or not New Super Mario Brothers U is the greatest Mario game. They could still make an even greater one. I believe in them.
Where's the DLC campaign?
Exactly. Kevin, do you have a pick?
So there's probably a half dozen games I could choose from, but I'm going to go with the bold pick of Godzilla Destroy All Monsters Melee, which is the greatest Godzilla game ever made.
Is it, though?
Well,
that was a serious is it, though? That wasn't meant to be like Thor from Ragnarok. That was a serious is it, though? Because I had that, and I didn't.
It seems like a low bar.
I didn't like that game very much, and I don't know if it's because I was silly or because it's actually not great. But how many monsters can you get in that game?
Like a dozen or so.
That's tons of monsters. I love it. Can you get Jet Jaguar?
He's in the sequel, which...
He's not a monster, though.
He's a monster to me.
No, the sequel's not on GameCube, Wii U, or 3DS. You're moralizing here.
Is it just on PS2? That's so silly.
It's on Xbox as well.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. Yeah. I bet that did great in Japan.
But yeah, my buddies and I used to play that all the time. You know, the four-player mode is just a complete chaotic mess, and I love it.
Did you play the WayForward one on the Game Boy Advance, Godzilla Domination?
I did not.
Oh, that was quite a fun game. I especially like the fact that because it's WayForward, they managed to shoehorn a new waifu in there. That was nice. Like,
they know where their money's at.
I thought of another important entry that I must not let say go unsaid. GameCube games... Nintendo published it. They must have the master copy somewhere. Eternal Darkness. Mic drop.
Yeah. There it goes. There goes that mic. Boom.
Yep. I'm not dropping this one because it's expensive, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get you. Could I? I'll nominate the original Chibi Robo. Would be nice to have another go at that, to be honest. That seems like it's a game that could do with not being trapped on a dead system. None of the sequels have done it.
There's really a lot from GameCube that deserves to be, you know, dredged up from history. Like, we got all these Wii U games that Nintendo just said, no one bought these, so let's sell them again and make, you know, massive amounts of money on them. They need to do that with GameCube also.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Let's move along. From Everyday Patrick, does anyone on the staff like the Soul Calibur series? I don't think there have been any episodes about this super awesome and super fun franchise.
Don't get me started on the Soul Calibur series, my word.
In a good or bad way?
Good, but in a good way that is probably not good to talk about. I played it when
you're
I was
a big fan
very...
of Taki.
No, it was actually not Taki, but you get the vibe, you get the idea.
Gotcha. When I was there's lots to fixate on there.
Yeah, when I was like 15 or something or 14, I was just like, I see I've unlocked the special art gallery. Oh my goodness. Oh my word. Hello. Etc. 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 But no, aside from that aspect of the game, I do actually really like Soul Calibur. But I like it in a way that I don't know if I could do an episode on it because I'm not particularly into its technicalities. I can get someone in who is maybe, but for me, Soul Calibur is picking Nightmare and mashing the triangle button or whatever and just laughing the whole time. I love Nightmare. He's hilarious. He's like suffer. He's just the best. He's metal.
I like Soul Calibur so that I can make fun of Necrid, but that's about it.
Necrid. Neckbeard, more like me.
I've always been more of a 2D fighting bitch than a 3D fighting bitch, but I definitely played a lot of Soul Calibur 2. So when it turns 20 this year, yes, I will probably do a... It's probably going to be this week in Retro Fodder, but... yeah, it's a series I wouldn't mind examining more and learning more about, but as it stands right now, I really only have memories of of Soul Calibur 2. That's all I've got.
Mark it, because I'm going to definitely try and do an episode. All right, let's put that one on the calendar. I'll try and make that happen.
All right.
You heard it here. Yeah, I've played a bit of Soul Calibur. I've never really delved too deeply into Soul Calibur. It seems fine. It seems pretty fun. I understand why people like it, both from the waifu perspective and from the gameplay perspective.
Yeah, I picked up the original because it was so hyped and said, I don't know. And then I picked up the second one because it was extremely hyped and also had Link. And I said, oh, okay, this series just isn't for me. That's fine. That, you know, it's an important lesson in learning to accept the fact that just because a thing is popular doesn't mean you necessarily need to enjoy it and necessarily need to be part of the conversation. And I'm happy to just sit back and let other people talk about it, because there are certainly people who will say a lot about it. We should get some of the former EGM staff on an episode about Soul Calibur, because that was an office fixation. And I think Shane Bettenhausen owes Dan Shu like $12,000 or something in their stake bets. Like, Shane is not good, but he loves to wager about how awesome he is. And yeah, he lost a lot of imaginary money back in the day.
You know, before you said anything, I just assumed that this seemed like a very Shane game, I gotta say.
It's something that drew me in a bit to Soul Calibur. Was 2 was the one I jumped in on the PS2, and what drew me into it as someone who doesn't really play versus games that much is it offered a lot for a single-player game, like when a lot of fighters just really weren't doing that. Like, you've got whole the Edgemaster mode or whatever it's called, where you can go through almost like dungeons fighting the computer. You're unlocking weapons, you're unlocking new characters, you're unlocking these art galleries of obscene imagery that shouldn't be in the game. It just offered a lot, and, you know, I feel like Mortal Kombat came along and pretty much picked up the ball and carried on with that single-player focus, but that's what drew me into it, and it got me to, like, other fighting games that maybe necessarily didn't have that, because it made me realize how to play them more.
Yeah, it was part of this very... It kind of came out at this time where there were a few fighting games that said, hey, let's really focus on making a great single-player experience. The PS1 port of Street Fighter Alpha 3 in particular was like... Here is a buffet of things for you to do that don't involve playing against another person. The amount of single player content and stuff to do in that game was unbelievable. And Soul Calibur definitely had the same thing going on for it.
It had that RPG-ish sort of world tour mode where you could raise up a character's level and make them stronger. I think they ported it to the PSP and added even more shit. Like the Street Fighter Alpha 3 Max, you boot it up and you've got like 12 items right there on the menu. It's absolutely crazy.
I feel like Soul Calibur 3 was basically like all that single player stuff. Like, I know there was a versus mode in it. I saw the arcade machine, but I never heard anyone talk about anything but the single player for Soul Calibur 3.
That was the first one where you can make your own fighter, wasn't it? Or at least
get them out. I think so.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. Let's hear another question from the Patreon poll.
All right. From Eric Kreisman. What absolutely impossible retro compilation would you like to see to happen? I.e., probably can't happen due to something like licensing issues.
Oh, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Oh, no, wait. Wonder Boy. All the Wonder Boy games. Oh, no, wait.
No.
You get it.
I'm going to say a compilation of NES great games by defunct developers, like Little Samson from Takeru, and... the G.I. Joe games from Kid, and let's see, what else was in there? Something from ICOM, I don't know, like Vice Project Doom. Just put all of those into a compilation of like crazy expensive NES games that can never be republished, the compilation. Put it out there for like, yes, there you go. I think Shatterhand was also ICOM, or Natsume maybe. Just stick those all onto a compilation, sell it for $30 instead of, you know, Little Samson's going for what, like 2,000 bear cart now? So big savings. Yeah, that's the impossible port I want.
My serious answer would be a fully translated collection of old Falcom stuff like Xanadu. And I forget the name of even the series, but I remember looking all this stuff up and thinking, oh my God, I want to play these games so much.
Dragon Slayer? Everything was Dragon Slayer.
Basically all that stuff from like the MSX on like, and then like the, I don't know what else it was on.
X1, PC-98, PC-88.
I mean, I just want to play those games. I want to play them in English, and I want to play them now.
Yeah, they're doing it.
Fan translations are really doing it for those games. So, yeah, I really would love the chance to get those games played. They look really fun.
Yeah, there's a fan translation of Dinosaur coming. Everyone's favorite Falcom game that doesn't feature dinosaurs.
Nice.
Yeah, actually, now that you say Falcom, a compilation of the Brandish Quintology, or no, it's the Tetralogy, would be pretty amazing. I think there were four of those, and one of them came to the U.S., and the second one was called The Planet Buster. Oh my god, I need That's to play awesome. A game called The Planet Buster.
Yeah, one of them was on PSP, I want to say, the remake or something?
Yeah, The Dark Revenant. That was really good.
Yeah, I think you can get the original SNES one in English, maybe, and then the rest of them, no. I'm not sure exactly how it works.
There's fan translations, but two of the games were only for PCs, Japanese PCs, so they're pretty much inaccessible unless you want to go through a lot of hoops.
Basically, yeah, early Falcom stuff in general, I think, is very desirable to me once I realized how much I did enjoy the stuff that you can get, the contemporary stuff like Ys and like Xanadu Next and Legend of, whatever it's called, Trails in the Sky, that whole series, Legend of Heroes.
Yeah, all of those are just Dragon Slayer.
Yeah. And I'd like to play those early games. They look very much up my street. They look exactly my kind of mix of action and RPG. I would love to play them.
I have two ideas that would be probably impossible. One would be a compilation of Aki wrestling games from the Nintendo 64 era.
Oh my god,
WCW doesn't exist anymore, and WWE, I don't think, would play ball. Likewise, even though Capcom would own part of the characters, a compilation of Capcom versus games would also not work because they'd have to cooperate with other companies, you know, like the Marvel games, or the SNK games, or the Tatsunoko game. Like, all those stuff, I'm sure, would involve lots of faxes to other companies that they wouldn't want to bother with it. But yeah, those games would be, you know, they come back every once in a while. You know, you had that Marvel vs. Capcom Origins thing on PS3, I think. But yeah, and yeah. I guess to go back to earlier in this episode, I think Arcade 1-Up might have had a Marvel Capcom something or other, but those games are fantastic, and I would love to see them, you know, compiled in some sort of format, but I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately.
What? A compilation of compile games? Okay, if you insist.
See, I would be all for that.
Is it has Guru Logic Champ on it, I'm in. I love that game.
No, I would definitely be on board with the Capcom versus SNK collection. I love CVS2, and the Neo Geo Pocket game is great. CVS1 is great. SVC Chaos is there. You got the card battle games. There's the unreleased stuff that they could like include in there. Like someone found a second Neo Geo Pocket game not too long ago in Japan. There's apparently CVS3 got started on PS2, like throw in some dev materials there. Capcom Fighting All-Stars was apparently built out of the bones of that project. That never came out, but apparently was done. You could include that. Just give me that. That's all I want, think
it's
Capcom.
It's answering this and the previous question, but if they were to compile the two 3DS Kirby platformers and put them out with full, like, up-resed, looking very nice, Planet Robobot and Triple Deluxe, that would be a cool thing to have.
Oh, yeah.
They're amazing games, and they're kind of stuck on a 240p screen, so that's kind of a bummer. Well, they're not. You can just emulate them, but you have to delete them off. You get it. The same meme, like you're doing. Yeah.
All right. So Craig wants to know, your podcast seems to have the momentum of a runaway freight train. Why are you so popular? And I think the answer is evil. Is it because we're evil?
It's a tough question, but a fair one.
I'll take credit for that. I feel like I've been making a lot of good tweets, and that's made the big difference. That's made
I feel like
difference.
Despite my presence, you've really pushed, done well to get past the lackadaisical effort that I put into these things.
Craig also wants to know, when is the Grandia episode?
No one even knows what that is. Shut up.
I played Grandia, like, I don't know, halfway through and got kind of bored and drifted off. But I did play the PS1 port, which I hear is not as good as the Saturn port. But that could just be Saturn fans perseverating. I don't know.
It's on Steam now. They've brought it on Switch. I think they brought it back, didn't they?
Yes, with like weird sprite filtering.
Is Grandia the one which has the combat system where you can see your enemies on like a bar, and when it gets to the end of the bar, that's their attack, and you have to plan to push them back so they don't get their attack?
That's
a really
also,
cool combat system. Penny Arcade stole it.
Final Fantasy X and... What was that called? Shadow Hearts? Yeah.
Oh, Shadow Hearts. That was a cool game.
A lot of people have stolen that because it's good idea.
Let's do a Shadow Hearts episode. The hell with Blandia.
Wow. Blandia was a different game altogether, actually.
Oh, I
Blodia? Back in Capcom.
No, wasn't there a shooter called Blandia? Yeah.
I think there actually is a shooter called Blandia because I'm pretty sure I'd make fun of it when I see it.
I want to say yes.
Actually, I mean, Grandia, I've not actually played it, but it's probably all fine. You know, I just like to mock people relentlessly for no reason.
It's a weapons-based versus fighting game developed and released into video arcades by Olimar in 1992.
Nice.
That is Pikmin a generic-looking 19... no, not Olimar. Olimar.
Where's the Olimar game compilation?
Man, this looks like what if Soul Calibur, but a 1988 anime.
Sold.
Okay, Blandia episode coming up. Grandia, don't know about that one. Kevin Hardiman wants to know, now that Sonic Frontiers has released, what are Stuart's thoughts on the new game? But I think there's going to be a whole episode about that. So, next question.
Oh, man,
that episode is heavy. Like, that got heavy. Man.
It's already the
like,
can.
Because the gravitational constant has changed in the future, what's going on?
I was just very upset, so I started eating. I'm going to pipe that episode because, in my humble opinion, that's probably the most passionate you're ever going to hear me, because that game, like, broke me.
Mm.
Not necessarily in a way of acknowledging that that I think it's terrible or anything, but I kind of do. Listen to it. You'll hear me. You'll hate me after you listen to it. You'll think I'm a complete twat. It's going to be great.
So business as usual.
Nice.
Yeah.
I got dunked on.
Go, Jeremy.
All right.
That was good. That was good. I raise a glass to that dunk.
I feel bad now. All right. Diamond, why don't you pick up here while I go feel bad?
Sure. We have a letter from Thomas Jung, who says...
I think it's just Thomas Jung.
Okay, maybe. Tomato, tomato. I've noticed that classic PC gaming has gotten short shrift over the years, although Stuart has given the UK Micro and Amiga big love.
Thank you.
Are we going to see discussion of the US PC side of things? It's a vital part of the story, after all.
Is it? Is it, though, really?
Well,
sure, but my feeling is when we find someone who was rich in the 80s to be on the show, they can talk about it. But I was poor in the 80s, and my family could not afford a PC, so we stuck with consoles because that's all we could afford. So that's what we got.
What are we talking about? Like, shareware? The rise of software, Apogee. I mean, I'm going to be doing an Apogee episode. Will that help? Would that be nice for people? I love Apogee.
You know, Nadia got Star Control. There was that...
Oh, those amazing Star Control episodes.
Yeah.
I thought that was a Genesis game. Hey!
Oh. You know, it's funny, Starflight was probably my favorite PC game, and I just played the Genesis version, so...
Oh, yeah, you know, there's a whole bunch of... LucasArts, and then we have Sierra Adventure Games coming up.
Bob will do those. I hope Bob gets me on the Sierra one because I'm the only person who likes them.
What else was there?
I think you could get Jared Petty on board to talk about Ultima or something.
Yeah, we could get Jared to talk about like Archon. We could talk about flight sims. We could talk about, you know, hex-based war simulations. I guess those are kind of the main grist.
I think that with PC gaming, that's not... I mean, there is a story there, but the story is I guess, the games rather than the format. Is that fair to say? I mean, PC is just such a broad... I mean, even within PCs, you had PCs that couldn't run games. You had PCs that... could only run certain things in so many different formats, and I guess that's kind of interesting, but I don't know.
It was very niche in the US, but you know, they offered a lot of horsepower, so especially in the 90s, you were seeing a lot of really advanced trickery going on with the U.S. computers. I mean, we had a Commodore 64 in the late 80s, and we got a Windows computer around, like, 92. Mm. I was not good at figuring out command line stuff, so I did not play very much on them, that I couldn't just load up through Windows. But, you know, they were pretty neat. They definitely had their own vibe to them.
There are some PC games I'm going to be talking about. Like I mentioned, Apogee, I want to do Duke Nukem as well. That was a kind of a PC classic at the time. But not so much just PC gaming more broadly. Has anyone done, like, Looking Glass? Has anyone done, like, Baldur's Gate and Thief? And
no, but I know the people who would be perfect to talk about those things.
Yeah.
Maybe someday. I mean, it's a broad topic. There's a lot that we've covered on PCs and a lot that we haven't. So,
is the Commodore 64 a PC?
It is. It is a personal computer.
It's a PC of shit.
Hey, oh no!
I'm a specky boy till I die.
I had one of those. Really? I enjoyed the C64.
No, I like the C64. I just, you know, specky versus C64. That's the rivalry, and I've got to represent my side.
And somewhere there's just the poor Amstrad CPC fan just waving a flag in the rain and the mud.
To be fair, that thing's visuals can be downright hypnotizing. I love the look of the games on that thing. Really nice, almost pastely looking games.
It's very pretty. It's just, you know, it's not in the conversation.
It's not in the conversation.
All right, moving on. Dr. Matt Lee says, I'd like Stuart to tell us what the biggest leaf is.
Oh, one of those big things that is in water, you know, a lily pad. That's pretty big. Is that a leaf?
That is. We've got a Monstera, and it's appropriately named. Those are some big-ass leaves.
I know, but they specifically asked for me, not you, Jeremy, sit down.
Okay, sorry. Jesus.
I think the biggest leaf.
I'm going to leave now.
I personally think the biggest leaf is Monstera.
Well done. Okay. I'm glad that you could clear that up for us. Yes. Johnny A says, what are some games that you loved when they came out that you think held up well over time? And what are the games that you loved when they came out that you think have not held up well over time?
I think you're describing the entire premise of the podcast, buddy.
Kevin, let's start with Kevin.
Oh, boy. You know, Power Stone 2 holds up great. Wonderful game. Recommend it to everyone and all their friends. Games that don't hold up. Oh boy. You know, I remember having a lot of fun with those PS2 SmackDown games, and I think only maybe one of them is still any good.
Here Comes the Pain.
Yeah, Here Comes the Pain. Holds up. The others, not so much, but we sure made a dinosaur man in them, so, you know, I'll always have a little bit of affection for them.
I think that the question is essentially the premise of Retronauts, so I guess listen to the episodes of Retronauts and you will find our answers on this subject. I mean, as I've massively missed the point, that's what I've mostly been talking about.
Oh, okay. We should have given you a brief on what the podcast actually was before we...
Oh, hell, what is it supposed to be?
Sorry about that. My bad.
Oh, geez. I've been embarrassing myself for ages.
I know, but it's been really funny, so we just didn't want to tell you.
Games that hold up. Old Game Boy games that have small graphics, minimal Game Boy games like Batman and even the Gremlins game by... Oh, they're both Sunsoft. That makes sense. The original Mario Land. Games that don't hold up. Game Boy games with big graphics that blur all the time. There you go. That's my answer.
Yeah.
I'm going to say games that I loved when they came out that hold up well. Definitely the better grade of Mega Man game. Just love those. Games that don't hold up well that I loved. I don't know. I feel like all the games I loved are just great, and nothing will ever change that. I mean, I just have immaculate taste. So,
So basically what you're saying is...
There's nothing to take back, honestly.
What doesn't hold up? Everything I like holds up. Everything that you guys like is garbage.
Yeah, and in fact, there are a lot of things that I liked back then that I think are even better than I realized at the time. That's how forward-thinking I was.
I'm sorry for going on and on, but could I briefly espouse one of my philosophies, please?
Sure.
There's no such thing as a dated game, only a dated gamer. There are no dated games. You're either in the game or you're not. Even if modern games have more quality of life, that doesn't make the old game dated. When it came out, that was how it was. It is what it is. So you've got to accustom to it. I quite like games that have old, dodgy controls because I feel more like I'm having to pay attention. I feel more engaged by them. So I don't believe in the concept of dated games, and I reject it.
You say there's no dated games, but what about Tic-Tac-Tola on the Bally Arcade?
Operation Secret Storm.
It was a good operation. I liked it. It was a good storm. I don't know. I don't even know what that is.
It's a secret.
How am I supposed to know if it's a secret? I can't even begin to put a pin on that one.
All right, well...
good answer.
Were there any other... Did we touch on your thoughts, Diamond? I don't believe we did.
For some reason, I'm looking at this question, and I think Narc is good for both halves. It is a game I loved, and it holds up because it's a weird game, but also if you play it today, you're kind of like, what the hell is going on? So I feel like Narc is a good answer for this question. Ooh, Narc.
Interesting.
1988 Narc.
It's more relevant than it's ever been.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to prompt us with another question?
Sure. Let's read from Tyler Dogue, who says, I have two questions, and you can disregard the first one. I disagree. Number one, when will you do an OC remix episode? Number two, wouldn't Virtual Console on PC be a money printing machine? OC remix... I would love to talk about OC Remix, but to be honest, I feel like it would just be me playing Crystal Flash over and over again and telling everyone, oh man, Crystal Flash is so good. So there wouldn't be much of an episode, but I would have fun.
I think it could be an interesting episode, but I have to make a quite broad comment on that Virtual Console on PC idea. Okay, look. You know what you can do on a PC, right? You can, you know that Virtual Console is a thing. It's called an emulator. Like, that is something that you can do on PC. You can go on Steam right now, and you can download RetroArch. Although, you probably shouldn't. I think there's some moral reason you're not supposed to use RetroArch. I apologize if so. A PC essentially is a virtual console. You know, you can play anything from almost any era easily. And I'm not going to do the same joke three times on the same episode. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to say it. So just, you know where I'm going. You know what I'm talking about.
OC Remix would be very cool. And my favorite OC Remix story is still my friend learning that you could burn new songs onto Sega CD games and making a version of Fatal Fury Special that was all Ice Cap remixes. Because, you know, for a while, there were just so many of them. He ran out of space on the disc before he ran out of remixes.
I replaced all of the music in Mickey Mania with CD audio versions of the game, of the Mega Drive music for Mickey Mania, because I liked it better.
That's a power move.
It's probably the most niche thing that anyone's ever produced. What does the OC stand for in OC remixes?
Overclocked.
Why
it was a comic
that?
Strip. It was a webcomic about games that they emulated and made jokes about. And I discovered the existence of really interesting games that way, like Snacks and Jackson. So shout out to the original Overclocked comic strip.
Was it like Penny Arcade? Was it like some dudes going like, this game sucks?
Yeah, pretty much. But they were like disembodied floating heads or something. I don't know. It was fine. It was very millennial, turn of the millennium.
It's cool that it stuck around as OC in that form, though. Because, I mean, I remember people talking about this like 15, 20 years ago, surely.
Oh, yeah. It was around in like 1999, 2000. It's been around for ages. And it started as a webcomic and just kind of like the remixes were a side thing. And then that became what they actually did.
So it's been around for that long and it still hasn't managed to produce one single decent remix. That's insane.
Aww.
Got him.
Dang. I don't really have much to add to this topic, so Let's jump on. Preppy Prince says, if you were given the blank check to make any game you like or enlist someone to do it for you, what would it be? And I guess we need to start with Stuart on this one because he's laughing.
Oh, God, I'm laughing because I have absolutely no idea, like, what I would do if I had infinite budget. Like, if someone said to me, here's, like, a small amount of money, go and make a little Game Boy game, I would do that, you know. But with an infinite amount of money...
What if you had the money to make a like, full AAA, FromSoft-developed...
Jesus.
James Pond sequel.
Oh, God, James Pond. Yeah, just might as well throw the money in a fire. That's just, Jesus. Or in a river, I suppose, would be more appropriate.
But, I mean, think how... there you go. Think you how cool this could be. Because, you know, James Pond, you know, RoboCod. So you've got, like, the front mission mech building aspect of it. But it's kind of like a shooter platformer, so you can get kind of the, you know, the Bloodborne sort of thing going on. Like,
you know,
it could be everything
could be.
FromSoft all together as James Pond. How is this not, like, immediately the first thing off your tongue?
I know what I would do, and it's not really making a game, so it's kind of cheating. I'd form a publisher that re-released old games with new features and compilations and things. That's what I would like to do. I'd like to do something like what Digital Eclipse are doing, where they're taking these wonderful games and giving them so much attention and care. But I would do it with the stupid, debased shit that I like, you know. Buy everything back off Pico. Like, I'm having that, thanks. Radical Rex is going to get its proper definitive edition re-release. Cheers.
Wasn't that the game based on the Whoopi Goldberg movie?
I wish it were. Would that it were. But no, Theodore Rex and Radical Rex are two separate, equally wonderful things.
Oh, that's right. I remember reading that. Okay, you're right.
But I want to get James Pond 3 back out there because I genuinely think it's one of the best games ever made. And no one respects it. And the reason is, it doesn't have a save feature because they went out of their mind and forgot to put one in. Just ridiculously long passwords that you only get one of every, like, 60 levels or something. It's ridiculous.
That was a console game, right?
It was a console game. It was also on Amiga.
So you can play with an emulator with save states. Problem solved.
You can, but that's still not right, is it? It's not right. The game's also too hard. It needs some balancing. So, again, yeah, that's what I would do.
Wow, too hard for Stuart seems dire.
I don't want to come across like I'm some get good kind of guy. I don't like having any fail state. You relish the
difficulty. That's what I'm saying.
I do. I enjoy it.
So if it's too hard for you, there must be something wrong with it. Like, it genuinely is. Whoa, what's going on here?
It's way too hard. It has sonic speed. Like Bubsy, it's like sonic speed sometimes, but no regard for the fact that you are going that fast. You'll just run directly into obstacles. It needs a lot of work. So to answer your question, I don't know.
All right, then. Kevin, about you? Oh, no, sorry, Diamond, I didn't mean to step over you, please.
It's all right, if we've got a blank check, then I would take my blank check and I would go into the offices of whoever owns the right to Akiba Maid War, and I would insist on buying the rights to Akiba Maid War, and basically any game you make out of Akiba Maid War at this point would be fascinating. You could do a virtual novel, or a visual novel, you could do a Metroidvania, you could do a Yakuza-style game, you could do a 2D fighting game, you could do a third-person shooter. Anything from Akiba Maid War would be my go-to game at this point, because that anime was fantastic, and the characters are memorable, and yeah, that's what I would spend my blank check on.
Will Bandmade be DLC?
That would be appropriate.
It would.
What is this? It sounds horrible. Maid War.
Akiba Maid War is the alternate history version of what if maid cafes in Akihabara were actually gangs who had wars over turf.
That sounds very similar to an anime I watched many years ago called Bento.
Bento? Is it about lunch?
Yeah, where there were wars over discounted bento boxes in supermarkets, and there turned out to be a secret syndicate controlling the discounted bento boxes.
I'm intrigued.
I might have to check out this Akiba Maid War. When I said it sounds horrible, I felt bad because that was too harsh. I should have said it sounds odd. But I will have to give that a look. Yes.
Very recent. So this is not retro at all. It's very timely. But it's something I've been thinking about a lot for weeks since I watched the entire series.
Kevin, what about you?
Two words. Dizzy Maker.
Oh, hell.
Make your own Dizzy the Egg levels.
That already exists, though.
Yeah, but no one's making money off it, obviously.
That's true, they're not. Dizzy Maker. Oh, man, you would bankrupt me.
For me, there's a great Netflix series called Castlevania. I would love to see a video game adaptation of that. It's money on the table. They got to do that.
You know, Kevin, I honestly think that would be my answer, the fully AAA Dizzy game headed up by me. I honestly think that's what I'd want to do. I can just see it now, the open rolling fields, the FromSoft logo, Dizzy.
And you it's like Treasure Island Dizzy, you only get the one life because of a programming bug.
It's a huge open world with full of objects, and it's still exactly the same rubbish. You walk around picking up stuff and trading it for other stuff, and just there's like no combat or exploration hardly. It's just trading stuff, leave it, and forget trying to remember where you've left items and such.
The music would be great, though.
Oh, the music would be amazing. Yeah, as long as it wasn't on an ad-lib PC, in which case it would sound like farts.
Jeremy, have you given up your dream of Jetpack Goonies?
No. It's something we've even discussed at work, but I don't think anything is happening with the Goonies license right now. So, it's going to have to be a dream. It'll have to be, maybe now that I can't remember how to say his name, Kei-Huei Kwan.
Yes,
now that he's back in the spotlight and doing stuff and kind of a critical darling, maybe something will happen and Universal will be like, Jeremy Parrish, here's the call you've been waiting for. We need you to come and make an NES-style sequel to The Goonies 2 by Konami for us. And when that happens, I'm there.
What if they fail to secure the rights to jetpacks?
We could call it Rocket Pack Goonies. It doesn't roll off the tongue the same way, but it's the food club version. People would understand.
Could there be a Cindy Lauper song called The Goonies Are Got a Jetpack?
she's still out there, she's still doing stuff. I don't see why
she still wants to have fun.
Anyway, Steve Martin, love that guy. Only Murders in the Building, very funny. I've been listening to Retronauts since its beginnings on 1UP.com, and yet we still have no dedicated Odyssey 2 episode. Folks need to hear about its unique board game video game hybrids like their Lord of the Rings knockoff, Quest for the Rings, and also its parallel choice, like the Intellivision, to have a pricey add-on for voice synthesis. Now that you've got Kevin Bunch on as an occasional guest, I'm sure it'll be a much easier topic to cover. Kevin!
Yeah, I mean, I do love that weird silver box. It's true. No, I do like the Odyssey, too. I can definitely blather on about the thing. I've had it for, like, 20 years. It's got, like, a weird vibe to it, because in some ways it's more advanced than the Atari 2600, but in a lot of other ways it's just not, and it's, I don't know, it's such a strange machine. I like it.
Magnavox Odyssey, right?
Yeah, or the video pack if you're
never used it. I like Magnavox because it makes me think of Ultravox. It makes me think of Majora, and then I'm just like, yeah, Majora, cool guy.
It's got a great game called Killer Bees where you play a group of bees stinging robots.
That is so late 70s, early 80s when everyone was terrified of killer bees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still terrified.
That was definitely a thing. I was actually reading the other day about how. There was a thing a few years ago about how murder hornets were appearing in North America and were starting to spread, and that went away. And it turns out that they captured some of the hornets and put tiny transponders on them and let them fly back to their nests, and then they would destroy the nests. And so they've eradicated, more or less, murder hornets in the U.S., which is, like a species-wide genocide, but they're called murder hornets, so I feel like, God is on our side on this one.
They can hang out where they are ecologically supposed to, and they'll
be
happy.
Exactly. And that murder is not hornets. In North America. Or anywhere within, 5,000 miles of me.
I feel bad for the poor murder hornets, to be honest. It's a shame. They didn't ask to be called murder hornets, did they?
No, that's what they are. They are murder hornets. That's what they do.
They should be called friend hornets, pals,
Yeah, they're like the sharks and the jets and the murder hornets. That's the name of their group.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I like the idea of pal hornets because they fly slower than NTSC hornets.
Oh, so you can evade them more easily. Very good,
okay.
17.5% slower. Yeah, you die 17.5% slower as well. They're even more lethal.
Mark D. Myers says, do you think there's any chance of a retro collection of Sega Saturn or Dreamcast games? I can answer this. No. Racine G says, Retronauts has been my go-to podcast for video game discussion. I always loved the character-centric episodes where they talk about a specific character from a franchise such as Toad and Wario from the Mario universe. I can't get over how much I laugh at you guys' Toad impressions. Since you have also done podcasts about Moogles and Chocobos, it would be nice to see episodes about specific Sonic the Hedgehog series characters like Tails, Amy, or even Eggman and Rouge and Blaze, too. All right, Stuart, you have opinions.
Yeah, I don't want to do a two-hour episode about Blaze the Cat because it would just be me professing my undying love for over and over again. With Rouge the Bat, what is there to talk about? It's a bat with breasts. Where do you go from there, really?
You know, 90 minutes about Knack the Weasel. Let's go.
His name is Fang the Sniper.
Well, I mean, bats are mammals, right? So do bats in the wild nurse? I've never really thought about that.
I get an episode about that little scrote Tails, a boring little bastard.
I mean,
Sonic, I need to do things on the computer. Oh.
But he has a little biplane.
Yeah, that's fair. Tails is okay,
but he can also fly on his own, so why does he need a biplane? Come to think of it, you know, Sonic can run really fast. Why does he need to drive in a car in some games?
It's a mystery that's never been solved.
God. Man, yeah. That series, they just need to put some real critical thought toward it.
Yeah, they really do. Unironically, they definitely do. I mean, there are going to... Look, I'll just say this. I'm definitely doing more Sonic episodes because it's in my blood. You know, I have to do more Sonic episodes. I want to do some more deep dives into the individual games. Like, I want to do a full-on Sonic 1, like, looking at every zone kind of thing. And I'm also planning on doing a Sonic ranking hootenanny at some point.
There you go.
But that's in the far distance, because, like, the idea of doing the Sonic ranking hootenanny fills me with dread and fear.
That's going to go to a dark place.
Because what if someone gives an opinion that I don't agree with? I'm going to have to kill them, aren't I? So, what is that, you know?
That's why we're recording remotely.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna send some murder hornets over.
you have to have your own gamja bars when you do the episode.
I've got British murder hornets. They're much worse. They're exactly the same, but they got tiny little hats and pipes. I don't know.
Well, if we're doing specific character episodes, so we could do Bogardnauts. I would talk about Terry Bogard, all the Terry Bogard games. That would be
Boogerman.
Exciting for me.
Would that include Quiz King of Fighters?
If he's in it, why not?
Could we combine that? Could we do Bogard and Boogerman together? Like, they sound vaguely similar.
How many Boogerman games are there?
One, and he's also in Clay Fighter 63 and one-third.
We should probably talk about Clay Fighter at some point. Clay Fighter is a kind of an atrocity, but it's also interesting.
Or maybe just like Claymation games in general. Like, get Primal Rage in there.
Get Claymates in there. I love Claymates.
Oh, yeah. We can talk about how its creator went insane.
Did it?
Oh, yeah. Is Claymates not part of the whole Doug Tenapple universe?
Oh, you might be right. I hope not. I don't think it is. If it is, that's very bad. It's Interplay, so maybe?
The Clay Fighter's pretty interesting.
I like the fact that they called it Clay Fighter 63 and one-third. You have to admit, that's extremely funny.
As a teenager, I thought that was very funny. I never played the game.
You've got Boogerman in there. You've got Earthworm Jim in there for some reason, because it's Interplay, I guess. And, you know, the gameplay sucks, but hell, they're made out of clay. That's cool.
Maybe I was mixing up Claymates with Clayman. My bad.
I also like the fact that the second game is called Judgment Clay. That's really funny.
In a sort of, hey, we remember this movie from a couple of years ago, and now it's been 30 years.
We need more awful puns in our games, in my opinion, in the game titles. They need to be doing that.
C2 Judgment Clay.
That's... Like Assassin's Creed, like Valhalla should have been called something else that was like a joke, some kind of Viking joke. I can't think of one right now.
Hmm. Well, we've still got Ratchet and Clank, so as long as that's around.
The games are called, like, Up Your Arsenal or like Ratchet and Clank Doggy Style, something like that.
Going Commando, yeah.
Ratchet and Clank Penis and Testicles.
Might be a little on the nose, or maybe
oh, God,
south
I
of
hope
the nose.
Not on the nose. Oh.
Okay. Ryan Nagel says, what is your favorite console to use in the tactile sense? And does this always correlate with build quality?
Original Game Boy.
Is that because of build quality? Because that thing is a beast.
Yeah, it's a beast. It feels great in the hands. It looks great. And every time I touch it, I'm transported back in time. So that's, you know, that's nice.
Gotta go with the Neo Geo Pocket. That little stick, man.
Oh, the clicking so good. On that stick. Oh, my God.
Too bad about the screen, though. It's a lack of backlighting. I was just messing around with Neo Geo Pocket yesterday to work on the bonus book that comes with the Neo Geo Pocket Color Collection.
Nice.
And as much as I love that system, man, I just can't go back to those non-backlit screens. It's rough on my elderly eyes. I don't know how I survived back in the day.
It's
probably why I have elderly eyes.
I guess my abiding memory of the Neo Geo Pocket, which is a series that I love, is I use my original one so rarely now that every time I boot it up, I get the old that's the music I now associate with that thing, is the putting the date and time in and choosing my like horoscope.
Boy, yeah, I hear that in my head too now. Thank you.
I think you got to change the battery in that thing.
Yeah, I did it once and it spun out again. Had it for a very long time. I can't part with it. I've sold a lot of my old hardware and I haven't even got any games for it anymore, but I can't part with that thing. It's just too cute.
Well, Kevin said Neo Geo Pocket, and for me, it's like, well, I would just say Neo Geo because those joysticks are fantastic.
I have never touched a Neo Geo, and it makes me sad.
Oh, just like plugging in those giant cartridges into that thing, it's very satisfying.
Oh, yeah.
But every time you touch a Neo Geo, SNK charges you $10. It's really sad.
Yeah, it's probably for the best.
It's very prohibitively expensive.
If any of you listeners have a spare Neo Geo, mail it to me, please. Cheers.
For me, in terms of the tactile quality of a console, it's not my favorite console, but the Super NES, there is just something really good about every aspect of that system. It's very, it's lightweight, but it does have just enough weight that it feels, you know, it has some solidity to it. I love the eject lever. Just pressing that and popping the cartridge out is very satisfying. And the controllers, like, they just fit in the hand so well and they feel so good. And once we all figured out what the shoulder buttons are for, it's just kind of like the basis for every controller of the modern era. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, the Super NES, just good, solid quality. Like, good plastics. Oh, yeah, the controller has the two concave and the two convex buttons. That's such an amazing idea, and no one's ripped it off, and it makes me angry because it's incredible. I love it. I think the Analog Pocket rips it off, but that's it. Very sad. Also, the original GBA model, even though it's got no backlit screen, mod that with a backlight, and it's also very good. Just a perfect form factor.
Would it be heresy to say I wasn't crazy about the D-pad on this NES controller?
No, that's fine.
Yeah, the Mega Drive one I liked a lot more, with this kind of radial, like, almost looseness to it. It feels very nice.
Hmm.
I used to play the game Ristar. And I always wondered what everyone liked about it, because doing the controls just felt so awkward, and like doing diagonals was so hard. And then I played it with an actual Mega Drive, and I was like, I see, it's made for this controller.
That's always the rub with old games.
Yep.
Kind of running long here, so let's do a couple more questions. Diamond, grab one from the pile there and go for it.
Okay, so how about Ethan Fridmansky says, what are your recommended / favorite books on video game history? Do you know of a decent bibliography or historiography that documents solid print resources of video game history? I have been re-listening to the podcast a lot in the past few months, and it has me in the mood to binge read video game history, not my area of historical expertise, and have no clue where to get started. The historical side of games and technology is what keeps me interested in the hobby these days. Your podcast has been invaluable for this. Thanks.
I don't think anyone is making any books about video game history, are they? I mean, especially not chronicling games by game by game. That's not happening.
Yeah, that'd be ridiculous.
You'd have to be some kind of complete idiot to do something that stupid, I tell you.
There's definitely some, you know, like all-time giants in this field, even if they're a little dated now. Masters of Doom considered, you know, one of the high watermarks of the field. David Sheff's Game Over about Nintendo. I don't know how 100% accurate that is. And it's, you know, it's definitely become kind of like the sole source for a lot of historic Nintendo information. My understanding, and I don't know if this is true, but my understanding is that he had great access to Nintendo for that, and they didn't really like how the book turned out. It wasn't the most flattering to them, and that is why Nintendo does not really open up to external documentaries now. I don't know if that's true, but it would certainly make sense, because it was like he got some great access, and this was, you know, back when Gunpei Yokoi was still alive, and, you know, he could kind of shed a light on the history of this company.
I was going to say Service Games, The Rise and Fall of Sega was quite a good read. I don't remember the author, annoyingly.
Oh, yeah, I've got that on my bedside table because I was wanting to read through it to get insights on the SG-1000 and Master System era. And guess what? It doesn't have any.
No. Sort of a left field one, and I feel like it could be problematic in a sense, is when I was younger, I had this book, I still have it actually, which is this ridiculous tome called The Official Video Game and Pinball Book of World Records. It's a Twin Galaxies job. Huge, fat Bible of just numbers. It's drivel. But then at the back, there's like a 200-page section written by Walter Day, who's like the air quotes, like referee of Twin Galaxies, detailing him traveling around with the video games like team in the 80s of people like, you know, Billy Mitchell or those kind of people. And for all I know, it's a tissue of lies, to be honest, because it's, you know, but I found it an incredibly compelling read, the story of what it was like to be in the heyday of arcade gaming. And it's these individuals, it's humans kind of story. And I choose to believe that it's all true, because otherwise, like, what am I doing? And I recommend that, to be honest, if you can find a copy of it. It's a really interesting read, but bear in mind, it might be a load of old bollocks.
I was going to say, there is a running tally of video game history, like, oriented books online. I think it's on the History of How We Play website somewhere. My pick, if you've got the money and the budget, is They Create Worlds by Alex Smith, which covers basically everything from the 40s up until about 1982 video game history wise and he has extensive notes throughout of where he got his information from and, like, the sources he used. So that's also a very good option.
The History of Japanese Video Game Developers by John
Sapaniak.
I think there was some issues there, but those books inarguably turned out to be pretty great, I think, like as a resource. Maybe a tiny bit too much Gamergate whining, but... Yeah, there are some fantastic insights in those books if you can get past the prickly exterior, I think.
If you know French, I know Florid and Gorges did some really good books about Nintendo history, and he also did a history, like a biography of Tomohiro Nishikado, who made Space Invaders, which came out in Japan and France, and I guess the Japanese version had to get pulled because of... like some photo rights issues that were specific to that region. But, you know, I've read the book. It's pretty good. I read an English translation of the book that was not official.
I enjoyed the... I'm not sure if history is the sort of thrust of these books, but I enjoyed all of the Hardcore Gaming 101 publications. I recently picked up their Shin Megami Tensei, which goes through every single game in that series. And I'm not going to play those games, but I want to read about them, you know? And they're so extensive in covering what different ports and different versions and things. I guess that's kind of like history in a way. There's a book they did called The Guide to Classic Graphic Adventures, which I think reviews pretty much every point-and-click game ever made, which is a really interesting journey.
Yeah, it's massive. It's the size of a phone book.
It rules.
People probably don't know what phone books are now, but back in the day, the phone company printed out gigantic books of paper. Must have been very expensive, and then they just left them on your doorstep. It was weird.
They were just doxing people, weren't they?
Yeah, right?
Hmm.
Internet detectives for free.
Massive hard copy assassination coordinates. I would like to be selfish and just recommend two books by people who I actually know, and at least one of whom has been on this podcast before. Chris Kohler has written a book called Power Up, How Japanese Games Gave the West an Extra Life, Game the Industry. I forget the full title, but I thought that was a wonderful book that sort of gave an overview of a lot of different topics over the years. And I know he went and interviewed people, you know, like Shigeru Miyamoto to write the book. So that was kind of fun to read. And we mentioned it a few months ago, but I'll mention it again. Alex O'Neill's Itchy Tasty of All About Resident Evil, like the first 10 years of Resident Evil. You know, he lives here in Japan, so he went out and he talked to all those people. He talked to Hideki Kamiya. He talked to all the people who made those old games, and just a really fun, I thought it was a very fun book to read, and it gave a lot of insight into the series. So I recommend that one.
A lot as well. There was a lot of new information in there, and was presented in a very entertaining way.
Yeah.
The new History of Sunsoft book is quite good. I've been reading that.
I'd like to read that. That sounds really interesting.
Well, you can acquire that at limitedrungames.com, having been published by Press Run.
All games are good. All games yes. are good. Should be an interesting new book when that comes out.
They are good, aren't they?
But the person who wrote that is a bit bald.
Bald or bold?
Yeah, bold. Both.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so one final question to wrap this up. There's actually a ton of questions on Patreon. I feel like we need to get together again and just do a follow-up episode of this pretty soon.
Yeah, son of mailbag.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe daughter. I don't know. It's allowed. Drew Kestel says, I'd like to know more about our host's gaming battle stations. I see what appears to be Jeremy's research station in his YouTube videos, but I'm curious how you all play games. I assume it's different depending on whether you're playing something for fun or for research, but maybe I'm wrong. Where do you all play games?
Play games in my house? Inside my house?
I think really he means like platforms, you know, what devices, what kind of setup do you have?
Yes.
Do you mind if I once again butt in and ramble? I can just stop. That's an option.
I don't think we can prevent this, so just
you
go
can't
ahead.
Stop me. No? It's a fallacy to think
we've
you can
resigned
stop me.
Ourselves.
I set up for modern gaming. I have like a, you know, the telly with the PS5 under it, which I was very fortunate to get. And to be honest, I use that vanishingly rarely now. There are no games on that thing that I want to play at the moment. Most of my gaming is done on the same sort of computer that I used to do my work. And that means it's just basically a computer on a desk covered in shit with an Xbox One controller to play old video games on RetroArch and stuff like that. You know, I still have the old modded Mega Drive and such, and I have the handhelds, but those are mostly reserved for the bed. Or if I'm out somewhere, which is, also quite rare in these times, unfortunately. So not really so much a battle station, it's just whatever is lying around on a screen that can display video games, you know?
Kevin, what about you?
So I have an old CRT setup with a bunch of game systems that are nightmarishly wired in a way that means I have to push as few buttons as possible to make them run.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Nice.
I also have a modern computer, modern gaming setup for things that use HDMI, thank God. Much simpler. And for actually, like, recording video, I have a little PVM on my desk here, hooked into an RF demodulator and a RetroTINK, so I can record Atari or whatever else needs to come up. And that more or less covers it. I mean, I have an analog pocket somewhere for playing portable games and the like, but yeah, I'm pretty pleased with how things have come together in here.
I really want to get a CRT and get a proper retro station going. That would be fun.
Now's the time.
I recommend it. It's good times. Diamond.
So yeah, I've been a very impulsive person. So when I see something and I kind of want it, I try to get it. And then if whether or not I use it is a different question altogether. So my house is full of stuff that I really cared about for some point, and then I bought it, and then maybe I didn't use it as much. So Right now, the big thing I use the most is probably the computer that I'm recording this on right now, because I bought it in 2021, and it's got pretty good graphics, and it does a lot of stuff, and I've got some emulators on it. But the Steam Deck is right here. I'm excited to figure out how to get the Steam Deck to do other stuff that's not just Steam. I've got a Raspberry Pi in this house somewhere that I don't even know where it went to. I've got a tablet with some emulators on it in case I want to, like, emulate things on the go. But I also still have a Vita. My Vita is charging right now. I can see it. The light's on. It's charging up. I have a PS5 and I have an Xbox One X. I have a Nintendo Switch. I've got a really big TV in my living room. Some would say too big. Those people are foolish. There's no such thing as too big. if it fits, it works. But yeah, if I had my dithers, I would actually consolidate all this stuff and actually bring it all together. Like, oh, here is, you know, the gaming station, if you will. But instead, it's just kind of all spread out over the house. And I'm not even counting consoles that aren't hooked up. You know, I've got a Famicom Twin in a closet. You know, I've got the Neo Geo Mini arcade thing. I've got the SNES Mini. I've got the Neo Geo X in a closet. I've got so much here. And some of it I love, and some of it I probably shouldn't have anymore. I've got a Nintendo 64 in a box that I'm supposed to send to Stuart Jip in the UK. I don't know.
Yeah, we gotta sort that out at some point.
It's right here. It's in a box.
I think the next step for me is to get a Mister. Like, I'm really impressed with the Analog, and that uses similar technology, doesn't it? The Analog Pocket.
Yep.
A lot of the jailbreak cores on the Analog Pocket are taken directly from Mister.
Right, yeah, because that's what I've been using. That's pretty much replaced all my other handhelds other than, like, you know, the Switch and sort of Steam. But, yeah, I'd like to get Mister. I think that, but Big Telly is a must, because I'm very impressed with the performance and the latency and such.
It's a good investment, especially if you want to play these, like, arcade games and Japanese computer games. Yes. Like, I never have to buy an X68 that I was in. I could just play Gradius on there.
Someday, yeah. Once that X68000 core is up to full speed. It's still in development.
It seems
the downside to Mister is that everything is kind of you're kind of at the mercy of what the state of that particular core is like. So yeah. I find for arcade cores, Mister is awesome and allows me to capture a lot of footage that I'd otherwise have to go without or pull from YouTube. But for consoles, I find it doesn't quite always land the way I need it to. Like, there's a lot of incompatibilities. You know, limited run produced or sold Rendering Rager R2 for Super NES, Super Famicom, super rare game. And I was like, oh, I should play this before we sell it. So I jumped on and tried to play it on Mister, and it's one of the games that is not supported on the core. So,
weird.
You know, that was right out of the gate, just like a little failure. But, you know, those are kind of edge cases. It's an amazing piece of technology, and I love it.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me. I bought a modded Dreamcast to play Bang.io, and it's the only game that doesn't work because it's VGA.
Oh, yeah.
It just will not work. I love that Dreamcast. I'm glad I have it, but for Christ's sake.
You need to get an HDMI mod on it.
Yeah, I do, but
apparently it's pretty good. I mean, yep. I don't have one, but I know a guy who does, and he's just always espousing how it's worth it. And I'm like, well,
mine does help. It does go to HDMI, but when it switches to the VGA for those games, or it thinks it's doing it, it just will not display them, so you just get sound.
Okay.
I don't know how. There's probably a fix out there. I just haven't found it yet.
Yeah, my gaming setup, you know, when I play for not research, not for recordings, for videos, is either Analog Pocket or Nintendo Switch. I do play some modern games. Like, I played Kirby and the Forgotten Lands last year, and it was really good. But, yeah, the actual work setup I have that was referred to in the original question, it's all sort of orbiting a 19-inch PVM that I bought before those became impossibly expensive. And like Kevin, it's really wired up so that I can activate things with as few button presses as possible. I have a bunch of consoles on individual power switches. I have like a power strip that has individual switches. So I just have to say, like, okay, I want the TV, the speakers, and the SCART switcher. And so I turned on those power switches, and then that's all I have to worry about. But there is, let's see. At the moment, it's all kind of messy because I just started doing Master System stuff. So I've got a really souped up modded Mark III that I'm recording from. And then Mister is my backup for everything. Anything I can't get from a console, I can always get from Mister. Well, almost always, as discussed earlier. Mm-hmm. At the moment, I have a very expensively modded Epoch cassette vision wired in, but I'm about to capture the last two games for that, so I can retire that thing. And that you know, the modding process there to make it work within my needs was... I'm really grateful for the existence of Krista Lee of Sound Retro Company, because she went above and beyond what any other modder would have done, and actually managed to get the cassette vision to output S-Video, which is just ridiculous. So God bless her. She's doing the same thing now for a Gakken TV Boy. I'm probably going to pay a lot of money to her so that I can capture S-Video footage of six games, because this is my stupid life now. But also in this setup, we have, you know, Analog NT, Super NT, Mega SG. All of those are on DAX.
They're doing a final run of Super NTs and Mega SGs, and I'm just like, Christ, I really wish I had $400 to spare, because I've got to get the Mega SG. I have to have one.
I mean, but you know, for that price, you could get a Mister for about that same amount of money, and it would do all of those things.
Would it play the original cartridge? Just,
you know,
like I have.
I mean, the Mega SG, if you have the DAC and if you have that digital analog converter that Analog makes, you can do you can do 32x games and 32x CD games.
Yeah,
but like, how many of those do you actually want to play?
None, zero.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
Hey.
So let's see. There's a... Oh, gosh, what else is there? There's a Dreamcast connected through VGA, a GameCube running through component cables that someone was kind enough to donate, an N64, and that's RGB out. I've got an Atari 7800 modded for S-Video, a Super Graphics with an SD System 3, so it
that's
can output
so cool.
RGB videos and play anything that was published on NEC's consoles.
I'd love one of those. The whole PC Engine family is just so cool. Like,
it's so good.
The fact we got the PC Engine Mini was a blessing. Like, that was a blessing.
I've got an Atari Jaguar that someone found in the trash and gave to me for free. It was like the most symbolically perfect thing ever. Oh man, I don't know. I feel like, you know, my Analog Mini or Analog NT Mini, that's connected to a Famicom disk system. All of these things run through a SCART switcher into the PVM and also split off. It's the GS Card SW. So it splits off also into a FrameMeister to upscale for video capture. Also, when I play arcade cores on the Mister, I have a second smaller PVM set up on its side, which is probably terrible for it. But that way I can play Tate mode games without having to like crane my neck. Yeah, I've really spent like 6 or 7 years at this point trying to make this all work. And, you know, the funny thing is when I started doing my Game Boy videos, I was just using one of those crappy Super Boys or whatever, like the handheld emulator things with a Super Game Boy in it. It just only did RF video, low resolution. And someone saw the first few videos and said, look, this is killing me. I've got access to a bunch of really cool stuff. So I'm just going to send you a FrameMeister. And now want you to go out and start buying consoles that will, you know, output good quality and make better videos, because the content is good, but my God, man, this video is killing me. And that was very generous of him, but it set me off on this infinite rabbit hole that just has spiraled into, it's like what I do with my free time, just figuring out ways to make video capture better and then creating videos about increasingly arcane systems. I mean, really, like, beyond Gakken TV Boy, there's PV-1000 and Tomy Pewta, Atari XEGS. Like, I'm going to do all these things, and it's stupid of me, but I'm going to do it. You can't stop me.
It's all because
of this guy who's like, here, have a FrameMeister.
I wasn't aware that it was Battle Stations was just what's hooked up. I was not aware of that. That's a more... It's a short list, I guess. It's just PS5... Xbox Series. I bought, because like I said, I have more money than sense, but during lockdown I have the Xbox Series X and S, and the S is like upstairs because it syncs up with the other one. But I also have an Evercade Versus hooked up. I think I'm the only person who has one of those hooked up. I do love my Evercade.
Well, no one in America has them, that's for sure.
Yeah, I do love my Evercade. I was getting the XP, the new handheld, but they genuinely got like ram raided and they all got stolen from a lorry.
Oh, that's the one I was thinking of that no one has. I thought it was just the US shipment that got stolen.
No, it was the specific shipment that mine was in that got stolen. So mine, I'm not getting mine until March. I'm not upset about it. I've got more than enough to be getting on with, but I like it.
That's even worse than the time that when I was in high school, I had some comic subscriptions from Marvel, and the mail truck that they were on fell into a lake.
Oh, my God. And, wow.
I don't know how that happened, but like a month later, I got these horrible, just absolutely ruined, waterlogged comics from my subscription. That they managed to like dredge them out of the lake and send them on. Anyway, sorry to distract.
In terms of older consoles that I've got hooked up, apart from the Mega Drive, which is a modded one with like a 60 hertz switch and stuff, I have the Wii U still hooked up because it plays Wii games, and there's a lot of good virtual console on there as well, like the Mario Brothers 3 with all of the e-reader levels, and I don't really want to lose that. I don't like using the gamepad. The gamepad can go to hell. I just want to look at it on the screen. I have the PS3 still hooked up because that thing, as I've talked about before, once I found out how to get onto the Japanese PSN store, it's just absolutely loaded now with great Japanese games that you cannot get any other way. And they're eventually going to be gone away, and it's going to be the saddest time ever. But yeah, I don't want to lose that system, so that's still hooked up. But that's pretty much it for me, just those few things.
I've got a lot of the like what you'd expect. Like, okay, there's like a PS2, there's a Genesis and whatnot. Then there's like the weird stuff that I really like the CDI here that's been like fully refurbished and whatnot. There's a 3DO over there for playing basically Sailor Moon S and occasionally and Street Fighter and Gex. Yeah, I did play a lot of Gex on there when I first got it.
Good.
There's a Neo Geo that's also modded that I picked up at a flea market, and the guy gave me a discount on because we talked Neo Geo for like an hour.
That's so cool.
Nice. There's my 7800 I had when I was a kid that's still hooked up. If you were at MAGFest a couple of weeks ago, like that was the one that they had there because I bring stuff there.
Nice.
And then I've got like a shelf of stuff that like I cannot physically fit it into a position on there, so I just sort of rotate them in. So that's where, like, the Odyssey 2 is, the Bally Arcade, the Cassette Vision, etc. Whenever I need one of those, I can just pull it off the shelf, plug it in, do whatever I'm doing, and Bob's your uncle.
I mean, I think that the last thing that I would like to have other than a Mega SG or whatever is, I'd really like to have a Super Game Boy hooked up, because I play a lot of Game Boy, and that thing is fun. I played it with a friend recently. I played Kirby's Dream Land on it. And I just thought, this seems like almost the perfect way to play these games. Like, it may not be actually functionally perfect in terms of something like, I guess the Analog Pocket would be a pristine image. But playing on a Super Game Boy with all the Super Game Boy bobs and what they call bells and whistles and such, it's just, there's something really charming about that thing.
Well, you know, the analog Super NES core can do Super Game Boy now.
It can. I've been playing the Donkey Kong on the Pocket with the Super Game Boy stuff. I think well known to be a classic game.
I've heard it's good, yeah. Yeah, I didn't actually mean to just start ranting about all the stuff that I've assembled for my nefarious purposes, but I got to tell someone about it, and no one in my life cares. So this is my outlet. Anyway, we're over the 2 hour mark now, and we all have theoretically we all have lives. I know Diamond needs to go to sleep soon because it's like tomorrow in Japan. So
indeed.
We are going to bow out now. Thanks, everyone, for writing. We only got to like half the questions, so I really do think we need to follow up on this if everyone else is game. But for now, we're going to stop recording. So thanks again for writing in. This is a patron-exclusive episode, so I don't need to tell you how to find Retronauts because you are cool and already know. But I will let everyone tell you where you can find them on the internet. Kevin, as our guest here, let's allow you to go.
So I have a YouTube channel called Atari Archive, where I'm chronologically going through the Atari 2600 library, currently just wrapped up 1981. So we're into the boom year, if you will.
And you have a book coming soon that takes you through 1978.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that book. You should pick it up when you get the chance. It will also be a press run release.
Looking at April or May on that one. But the early printed copies, we got one paperback and one hardcover, and they look, you can't see it, but I'm kissing two fingers and a thumb right now.
And yeah, I'm on various social media accounts, either under Ubersaurus or Uberus, which is a really funny mangling of it that a guy did years ago that just sort of stuck.
Oh, that's not a Suikoden reference?
It is shockingly not. It was a guy at the arcade who was like, yeah, you Uberus. And I'm like,
I always thought it was a Suikoden reference. Okay.
I mean, I love Suikoden, so I'm fine with that.
Well, there you go. All right, cool.
But yeah, that's that. That's me.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Stuart, what about you? Where on the internet might you be?
You can find me still hanging on desperately on Twitter, at Chupacabra, which is a hilarious changing of the word Chupacabra to have the word stew in it, because that's my name. I hope that makes sense to everyone. I can explain it further if necessary. I've done a book called All Games Are Good that's coming out through Press Run. I don't know exactly when. I think summer is the last I heard.
Something like that, yeah.
It's gone to like final roof, and everyone's looking at it and they're going, what the hell is this? Why are we publishing this? This is just a man talking about Spectrum games. And
it's too late. We're already in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to urge all of the listeners to please buy the book. I don't care if you read it. Just buy it. Throw it into a fire for all I care. Just make sure that you buy it. That's important to me.
I haven't seen the finished printed version of that one, but we did get the white proofs, really? Just to show us how big it's going to be.
Is it big?
It is. It's chunky.
Oh, man, I've done a chunker. I'm so happy.
You did. It's not. It's since it's a black and white book that's focused on text, we didn't do the smooth glossy paper to make the color pop, because there's no color to pop.
There's no need.
So instead, it's like that kind of rough textured paperback, you know, like
it's
novel
an academic
type paper.
Work. That's what it is. It's a work of academia.
It's got that. I wanted that kind of like slightly textured paper quality that you get in you know, like a novel or something.
Yeah,
and like that stuff is thicker.
One of the great novels. It's a bit.
That stuff is thicker than the color slick paper. So
would you say it's a little bit coarse, like me?
Yeah, it's
like
a little coarse. Yes, very coarse, like you, and very black and white, like you.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's gonna be a big one. Much reading material.
I really hope that you will enjoy All Games Are Good. It's gonna be I think it's gonna be a lot of fun for people.
I look forward to it.
And I'm in fight.
Well, I'm sure if this is patrons, and you already know about my column, so you can find me around the internet. Let's look for Fight Club, FEIT, my last name, CLUB, a English word. And since we mentioned her earlier, let's just shout out Krista Lee is also a great musician. I'm a big fan of her album, Welcome to the Fantasy Zone. That's a kind of Sega-esque music that I really enjoy and listen from time to time. So
yes, when she brought me the modded cassette vision hardware at PAX, I made her sign my copy of Welcome to the Fantasy Zone, which I think embarrassed her a little bit, but it's such a good piece of music.
Yeah, I've never heard that. I didn't know she did
it's
music.
Great.
I saw she got me on Twitter, but I was like, who is this? Oh, it's someone who repairs consoles. Or that's cool. I didn't know they did music, so I'll check that out.
She does it all. She's great.
Yeah, cool. I'm excited.
All right. And finally, you can find me, Jeremy Parrish, all over the internet. People keep talking about Press Run. That is Limited Run Games book label, and we publish books not just by people who are on Retronauts, but that's kind of where I started from, just because I know these folks. And so actually everyone here has something in the works from Press Run. It's very exciting. And also you can find me, as mentioned, making videos on YouTube. Just look up my name, Jeremy Parrish. And if you subscribe to my Patreon, GameSpite, you have access to some very long-term patron-exclusive episodes about the Epoch Cassette Vision. And by the time this episode goes out, I believe the final Epoch Cassette Vision episode, which it was supposed to be a three-episode series, but no, it ended up going five because that's me. It'll be up, and you can enjoy learning the entire history of the Epoch Cassette Vision, which a really weird little system, but kind of fascinating. So that's the stuff that I do when I'm not doing this, Retronauts. We'll be back again on Monday with another podcast for you to listen to. And of course, 2 weeks from now, on Friday, with another patron exclusive, just like this episode. And in between there, there's going to be little mini podcasts, This Week in Retro from Diamond Fight. So many things to listen to, so many things to read, and we did not finish reading your letter, so we promise to try to do that someday. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.